Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the Anaheim Calling Podcast. It has been quite some time. We are back, and we're sorry that we were gone for so long. But there's been a bit of a dry spell in terms of news in Ducks world, and that should certainly pick up. Definitely some things to talk about. Jake is here with me, of course.
What's up?
Got some questions. We've got some questions to answer.
We do, but first, let me ask you this: how are you doing this morning? You doing okay after last night? After the trade? You doing okay? A lot of people were wondering. A lot of people wanted to make sure you were okay. I saw it throughout Twitter. For those that don't know, Alex Galchenyuk was finally traded from the Montreal Canadiens, and he was traded to the Arizona Coyotes in a one-for-one deal for Max Domi.
Yes, the talent hemorrhage continues in Montreal. Galchenyuk out to Arizona, like you mentioned. I was revolted at the time when I heard the news, and I continue to be revolted. But I'm hanging in there.
Max Domi, with four of those being empty netters.
Oh, damn it. Well, here's the thing. The only slight positive with Domi is that I believe he's ever so slightly younger. He's going to be ever so slightly cheaper. And they have the same points per game at this juncture in their careers. So for whatever that's worth, that's what we're looking at here, comparing both players. I still think Galchenyuk is the better player. I also think he could have netted something more via trade. And, you know, Arizona has already come out and said that they're willing to play him at center, which is something that the Canadiens were never willing to do all of these years, or at least not for any sustained period of time. So, yeah, being a Habs fan sucks. What more can you say?
My condolences.
Does that trade even look remotely good from an outside perspective?
No.
Yeah, I don't see that trade really aging well.
If this kind of puts it into perspective from kind of where I look at it, the first thing that came to mind was, how could the Ducks not have put something together to get Galchenyuk with Nick Ritchie if Max Domi got it done?
Well, I guess that the only thing there is that Domi has more of that offensive upside.
Yeah. It probably would have taken an additional pick to get that
done. I mean, I do think he had like a 45 assist season, something like that,
yeah,
a couple seasons ago. And so that's something, I guess. We don't need to talk about it.
Wanted to check in to make sure you were okay.
I'm doing all right. But we did send out a call for questions a couple days ago, just to kind of keep the ball rolling here during the summer as we make it through the summer months. We do have the draft coming up next Friday and free agency soon after that. So we are going to have things to talk about rather soon, or I guess I should say major things. But in the meantime, we reached out to you, the listener, to try to get some questions. And Jake, it looks as though the listeners provided.
They did. So this is kind of a soft one, or softball to start. But Dorkwing93 says he's got one. Why are we so good to him and to all of the other people on Twitter?
We're okay.
Making us blush here. We're just doing our best.
Yeah, we're doing all right.
Yep. And so next question. So we're just going to run through all of our Twitter questions and kind of go through in that order, and then go to Reddit, then Discord, then everything like that. So NM Baseball said, do you expect the Ducks to make any moves at the draft and or on July 1? What moves could they make? Have they typically made moves then? So I can get on the have they typically made moves just based off my memory, but do you think they make any moves?
I'm not sure really what they're going to be looking to do at the draft. I feel like they're going to be comfortable in their spot they're in at 23. I think that from there, you're looking at maybe on July 1st adding some depth pieces. But I think that they're going to be more focused on re-signing their RFAs and, you know, locking in guys like JT Brown. But maybe on July 1st. We've kind of spelled this out on previous pods, but there's not a whole lot out there, I think, in the way of depth pieces. I think that they may be priced out in terms of getting maybe a third line center. We still are unsure of Ryan Kesler's long-term health for next season, and so that kind of changes things. But I don't really foresee a big move on draft day. And I don't really see them being big players. What do you think?
I think on draft day, I could see them making some moves.
What kind of moves are we talking about?
I think
swapping picks?
No, I think if we see a trade from the team, it's going to happen at the draft, because the draft has become essentially the trade deadline, because you put all 31 general managers in the same room. They can talk, and the trade deadline is when the Ducks have made moves. That's when they traded Chris Pronger to Philadelphia. That is when they've traded down to get the get Raquel and Gibson. They're not afraid to make moves down if they need to. They made the Kyle Palmieri trade for picks on draft day. They got Carl Hagelin, I believe, on draft day. They've traded James Wisniewski for Anton Khudobin on draft day. So it's one of those things where I think if you just look overall at every team, a lot of trades typically happen at the draft, and it's because you put all these general managers in the same room that of course they're going to be talking, and things kind of come together more when they can just go back and forth and walk and talk, as compared to having to pick up the phone and going back and forth. And sometimes this leads to general managers making moves they shouldn't. Sometimes it allows them to make moves that they may not have otherwise, and for both good and bad. And I think that's something that we could see at the draft. And especially when you add in the fact that Bob Murray has kind of he's made those comments that he wasn't happy with how the season went. He wants to shift to younger team. There's all those comments he's made. Kind of the draft is where he can put his money where his mouth is on that aspect. And so if they're going to change the roster, the draft is where I expect that to happen.
Right. So then that leads to the question, who do you think is most likely to be shipped out on draft day?
I mean, I've made my opinion pretty clear that I think Silverberg is going to be traded this summer simply due to salary cap issues.
Well, who do you think is their best trade chip on draft day?
I think Jakob Silverberg is 100% the best trade chip, because
I think he's the most tradable, because I don't think he's the guy that really, I don't know how much he factors into their long-term plans. Well, and I think he can get you maybe some younger pieces.
Yeah. And I think that if you look at what he's done, he's entering into his prime right now. I think he's a guy that, you could get first. Certain teams may see him at $4 million being a very fair deal, and I think that that's based upon what the Ducks have in their system and what they're gonna have to be paying. That probably is a bit high, but in terms of his output, that's pretty fair, and so that's a pretty good commodity for a team to trade for. And so I think that that could get you a fair amount, especially if you add a condition. In terms of like him re-signing, you add a conditional pick to it, because that is key. I think that significantly enhances his value if it's almost like a sign and trade where you trade him and he's agreed to that extension with that other team.
Right, right. Yeah, I do think that, you know, as far as the kind of player he is, first off, like you said, it's funny because a lot of people within, you know, Ducks fandom complain a little bit about his contract, but it's actually a pretty tradable contract.
Oh, it 100% is. And I don't think this is a, you trade him because he's bad, you trade him because you want to shift the culture. I think you trade him because he's a guy that,
who's tradable.
Yeah, pretty much. And you want to open up some roster spots for younger guys. And this is a guy that is probably going to get a bump in his salary, and it's going to become harder for you to have him. And it's exactly kind of the issue that you find with players like that, that when they're at their contract, their kind of last RFA contract, they're at the perfect value. And then once they get into UFA status, you have to pay a little bit more, and that's where you start to get hurt by it, because
Let me ask you this. What do you think Jakob Silverberg nets on his next contract?
I think if he hits the open market, he's a guy that could potentially get five.
Yeah, I think that's maybe five. I don't even know, 5.5. But I don't see him getting a huge pay raise just because he hasn't had the big offensive season.
I mean, he's had two 20-goal seasons.
He's had 20-goal seasons, but how much does that get you paid? I'm curious. I'd have to go and look. I mean, it's going to, don't get me wrong, he's going to get a nice bump in salary. I just don't know by how much. And so I don't know, like, would you feel, how good would you feel signing him to a long-term extension on his next deal?
I'm not sure I would personally be comfortable with it just because of guys that are going to be coming up in contract, because you have to factor in the fact that Ricard Raquel, granted, this is a fair amount of ways out, but if you sign Silverberg to a long-term deal, that's going to eat up cap space a long ways out, and Raquel will need re-upping by the time during that contract for Silverberg. Guys right. like Hampus
and
Lindholm.
And the big Gibson extension.
And I think that's something you need to start planning for, and I think trading Silverberg allows you to sign that Gibson, and I wouldn't be shocked if we see a Gibson extension this summer.
Ooh, wow. I mean,
he's RFA next year.
That might be the first bold take of today's pod.
I don't even think that's that bold. He's extension eligible on July 1.
It's slightly bold. I'll put it at slightly bold. Although I guess the Ducks did extend Cam Fowler last summer.
Yeah.
And he had a year left on his current deal, so it's not unheard of.
No.
But if you're the Ducks, do you want to extend Gibson this summer?
I think after his performance this past season, yes. I think
even with the injuries?
I think even with the injuries, you do it, because if he has another season like he just had, especially if he is arbitration eligible, you put together two seasons like that, you're going to be getting $8 million, $7 million from an arbitrator, right. I would think. So you want to try to get ahead of this as much as you can. I think where you need to be cautious with giving a guy like Gibson that contract, you need to be cautious with your term. And that's just my personal opinion on goaltender contracts in general. I don't think you should go over 5 years just because of goaltending is voodoo, basically. I think in historically, any contract over 5 years usually comes back to bite that team in the butt. The only one that really hasn't is Henrik Lundqvist, and he's Henrik Lundqvist.
Right. Well, what I would say about Gibson, just to your point, is even though I think the conventional wisdom would be, let's see one more season of, can he last or can he stay healthy? I'm buying in now, and because I think the Ducks have more leverage now than they might next summer.
Agreed.
From a team perspective. If I'm Gibson, it's a little trickier, because do you want to just capitalize on what you just did, or do you want to kind of bet on yourself for one more season? It's going to be interesting with that one. But anyway, we should probably get to the next question.
Yeah. So the next question is from Kestrel Scott. Do you think the Ducks have a chance at drafting Ryan McLeod? So you and I are we're both not kind of the most well-versed in the upcoming draft in terms of the prospects and that type of stuff. But I did a little bit of digging on Ryan McLeod, and what I found from him isn't exactly someone that I would hope they draft, and he's a guy that may be picked higher than where the Ducks are at. He may be in the late teens, but he's a guy that was 1 week away from being 2017 draft eligible, and he only put up 42 points in 68 games this past season. Not this past season, but the season before this past season, he put up 70 points in 68 games, which is really good. The issue is when you're looking at junior scoring, is age is a very, very big factor. And so even though this is his first draft eligible year, he's more on par with the guys from the year before. And so this was actually his third year in the OHL. And so even though those totals are good, they're not amazing for a third year OHL forward. And so he's a guy that I would be a bit concerned with taking, just simply because he's older than all the other draft eligible prospects. And so he's a guy that I would be concerned maybe something like Nick Ritchie happening to, where he has these great numbers in junior hockey, but it's almost because he's bigger than everyone else, because he's 6'2", 200 pounds, and he's older than everyone else in his age class, right. At least.
Right. I think that it's going to be interesting at 23 for the Ducks, just because it sounds like in this draft from 20 to 40, it's pretty much all over the place. Whereas, I mean, 1 through 14, the lottery is going to be, people are saying it's going to get a little crazy. I still think it's going to be fairly predictable at the very top. The Canadians, it seems like they're kind of merging away from Zadina at number 3. And so that kind of opens up the board, you know, moving down. I think that at 23, I would just be curious to see the Ducks' general approach, whether they're going to take a home run swing at that spot or whether they kind of, you know, pardon the baseball analogy, but just try to get on base.
Yeah.
You know, do they take a home run swing at a guy like Ryan Merkley, who by all accounts is maybe the most talented or second most talented defenseman of the draft?
A lot of projections have him going earlier than 23.
Well, what I'm hearing is that he could potentially drop to the high 20s or into the second round.
Oh, really?
And so, well, yeah, there's just this whole thing. There's this whole fuss with his quote-unquote character issues. But the guy's really, really talented, you know, defensive issues aside. I wonder, at 23, do the Ducks envision getting a guy with just a high ceiling or a high floor?
Yeah.
You know, which one is it? So we'll see.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw out some names. These are what Benny and John Broadbent have thrown out in the articles on the website, which are both really, really good, about logical, who they should take, realistic, who they will, and who are the home runs. So Benny came up with, for logical, Grigory Denisenko, and I think both of them are in love with that pick. I don't know if the Ducks would do it just because they have not taken a Russian player or Russian forward in the draft, I think, since 2001. And so that is pre-Burke, pre-Murray. So
pure coincidence.
Yeah. And so the only Russian they've taken was Igor Bobkov since then. And that was in the late 2000s, early 2010s. And he was a goaltender. So that's really the only Russian. So realistic, Benny put Jared McIsaac, who's a defenseman from the Halifax Moosehead. Overly ambitious would be Grigory Denisenko. John also logically said Martin Kaut, who's, I believe, also, or no, he's Czech. And so that would kind of go along with them taking Andre Kasha. John said, realistically, Sarah Noel, who's a defenseman. One name that I saw today, which I found interesting when looking up mock drafts, was, let me find his name, Isaac Lundestrom. And so he is the top-ranked Swedish center, I believe, per NHL Central Scouting. He's the 8th ranked European skater. And the Ducks love their Swedes.
This is true. This could be interesting. We'll probably end up doing a pod for the draft, I feel like.
Yeah, so. I think that, and this is what I've said on Twitter, I think it's probably best for us to do one breaking it down post, to kind of be able to go through. There's so much up in the air. With who they're going to take, it's much better for us to be able to break down all the picks after the fact. And so that's where you'll really hear our take on the draft.
Right. I'm actually very much eagerly awaiting this year's draft. I think it's going to be one of the more interesting ones in recent years, because there's a lot of talent, but the talent is kind of spread out. And so after two this year, after Svechnikov, it sounds like it's just completely wide open. No one seems to really have a great feel for who's going to go where. And so maybe it's because I'm a Canadiens fan that I'm more excited about it than you might be, Jake. But I'm eagerly awaiting the draft, and I'm also eagerly awaiting the potential trades of the day as well.
Yeah. Okay. So Ryan at EcoGuy44431 said, how disappointed will you be if our alt jerseys are not eggplant jade throwbacks? So you threw it out on Twitter, and I'm going to make sure you have your sources. That it won't be eggplant and jade.
Well,
of this was just a troll job, Felix?
Well, no, but think about it. Everything we know about this team's branding, everything we know about the direction they've been going the last couple years, I just don't see. I don't see a universe where their third jersey is eggplant and jade next season. It's going to be orange, and I guess I should say that I don't really have someone telling me this. I'm reading the tea leaves here a little bit, and I would almost say with 100% certainty it's going to be orange.
Okay. So how disappointed would you be if it's not eggplant and jade?
I don't really have a horse in the race. That's... but I wouldn't be that disappointed. I think that if the orange is done well, then I'll be fine with it. I wasn't a huge fan of the last orange jersey just because I thought that the logo kind of gets lost a little bit in the orange. I think that the logo doesn't pop enough for me, and it's a good logo, which is why that's kind of disappointing. I didn't really love the shade of orange either. I thought it was, I don't know. And then the collar kind of bugged me with the Anaheim, you know, on one side of it. And, you know, but it's a good, like, that jersey is a good start. I think it's got good elements, but I want to see something a little more refined.
Yeah.
If they do continue with the orange.
It's interesting because that's one of those jerseys that I think on TV, it just doesn't appear well, but it's a jersey that in person, especially on the ice in person, looks amazing. At least just the shade of orange.
It's a decent jersey. I don't think it's a bad jersey by any means. I just think that it's just not quite there for me in terms of being this really kind of mature, fleshed out third jersey.
Yeah.
And so, and for me, maybe this is an unpopular take. I love the eggplant and jade, but I'd prefer seeing it as kind of a vintage night jersey, maybe a couple times a season, just to kind of maintain the more of the mythical lore about it. Then I feel like if we start seeing it all the time, maybe it loses a little bit of that value. And so I think that there is something to that.
I think that's fair. And I think that in terms of, for me answering the question, I don't think I'd be that disappointed. I like the orange. I like the orange brand.
You own an orange jersey.
I own an orange jersey. So. I'm a big fan of it. I like the symmetry between the Orange County team wearing orange. I just kind of like that whole thing. I do love the eggplant and jade. Grew up with them. My favorite Ducks jersey is probably the third jersey that they wore back in the mid 2000s with kind of the silver shoulders or the white with the jade shoulders, all the way down the arm. Those jerseys were just amazing. But I think you hit the nail on the head. It's probably best used as a throwback night. And I think all accounts, they may be doing that this season with it being the 25th anniversary season. For the 20th anniversary season, they did have just a throwback night and just wore that jersey for that one game, even though I believe that season they had a third jersey still. And so that could be done, and that might be done this season actually.
Well, my thing with the eggplant and jade is, like you said, I love the look, and even as a non-Ducks fan, just as a young hockey fan, we all grew up with that jersey. I mean, if you watch the movies, if you saw the Mighty Ducks on TV, even if you weren't a hockey fan at all, it feels like everyone was aware of that jersey and that look. It's just such a classic look. And to me, I think just keeping it on the shelf entirely is a mistake. I think you got to give the fans what they want. And just kind of breaking it out a couple times a year, I think that keeps some excitement around the jersey, and that lets us see the look. I think that there's nothing wrong with just giving the people what they want. This is an entertainment product after all.
Yeah.
I think that it doesn't cost them anything to just have a throwback night. I think that that's an easy way to sell tickets. So I'm all for it.
My last thought on this is, if they do this, sell the Adidas version of the throwback jersey. Don't sell the CCM vintage version that they sold last time when they did the throwback night. And the Reebok Edge version wasn't commercially available. Like, just sell the actual one that the players are wearing.
Right. Well, shout out to our listener, Ducks Hockey, who has the throwback night gloves that were worn.
Oh, yeah.
When I saw those
at our
pickup game, I almost lost it because those are some beautiful gloves. Yeah. So shout out.
So at Golden Nose Gold says, trading Perry is a complete long shot. I don't see it happening. #NMC, #Perry is still good. However, rumors are rumors. What other bad contracts are out there as possible big money swaps that could improve the team? Essentially, or maybe a left wing, maybe a right-handed D. Essentially, someone that the Ducks could trade Perry for as a part of the trade, or who the Ducks would have to take.
Bobby Ryan?
Bobby Ryan would be one. I think there's probably a couple contracts of guys that aren't playing that you could take off the books that would help, like a David Clarkson deal. But then again, that I believe is an uninsured contract. So you're paying for that, which I don't know if the Ducks would want to do. Off the top of my head, there's not. I mean,
I feel like if Perry gets traded, I don't think it's going to be either like kind of stowing away a bad contract or exchanging for bad money. I think it's going to be assets coming back.
There's going to have to be money, some sort of cap space involved.
Some sort, but I don't think it's going to be a gargantuan, you know, contract. I think maybe it's going to be a slightly suboptimal deal. I don't have any names off the top of my head to make that work, but I just don't know if that's if it's going to necessarily require that.
Here's a name that comes to mind that's been popping up in trade rumors, and not saying that this would make any sense to do, but Phil Kessel.
Yeah, I mean,
because that's a name that the salary
would you rather have?
Yeah, and the fact that his salary is $4 million and the Pens are looking to trade him, it's an interesting thought.
How did that even happen? Why are they looking to trade Phil Kessel?
I do not even know.
That is an interesting development. But if you can swing Phil Kessel onto the Ducks for Corey Perry and whatever it takes to make it work, I think that could be interesting for the Ducks. I mean, Kessel's still a very good player, and I could see him fitting right in next to Getzlaff. So there's that.
All right, Tony at Kid3124 asks, I know you brought up Montour's expected contract in previous pods, but do you think the Ducks should bridge or take a little bit of risk and go long-term plus cheapish now, i.e. Ryan Ellis or John Klingberg, not comparing the impact, just situation like 5 years at $4.5 million?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that that's a great question, first of all. And I think that secondly, what I would say to that is it seems like those contracts where the team buys a couple of years and maybe bumps up the figure a little bit in terms of average annual value. There aren't too many of those contracts that don't look good in hindsight, right? I feel like those, maybe I'm just not as aware of the bad ones, but it seems like those tend to work out. And at the bare minimum, it's a tradable contract down the road. And so I wouldn't necessarily shy away from doing that with Montour. I'm still a little skeptical as to what he turns into, but I think at the very least, he turns into a useful guy, and at worst, you can trade him. And so I wouldn't be afraid to do that if I were the Ducks.
Yeah, I think so, but I'd lean towards the bridge, just in my personal opinion. I think just trying to deal with the way they currently have the salary cap set up with the team, I think that they can do that bridge deal and work it out where his contract will expire when the Perry and Getzlaff and Kessler contracts are all off the books. And so if you give him like 2 or 3 years, kind of go that range, especially the 3 years, because that actually would coincide, I believe, with the Perry and Getzlaff contracts all coming off the books. And then you can re-up him then when you have a bit more cap space. The ones that come to mind in terms of contracts that probably don't look great, Galchenyuk maybe would be one. Just because of how they utilized him.
Yeah, I was going to say that's more of a team thing than a player. You know, because, I mean, he does have a 30-goal season under his belt. Yeah. So I don't know if that was on his current deal, actually. But anyway.
All right. So next question is Wade Jensen. I think that this is one where I don't really have an answer for it. Who is our future number one center after Getzlaff, and how will we obtain him?
Wow. That's probably a question you'd like to be able to answer. I don't think that player currently exists within the organization, put it that way.
I think it's someone that either the Ducks will need to have a bit of a retool to draft, or they're going to have to come up and be creative or get some sort of free agent signing in the future. And I don't see them going after John Tavares this summer to be that.
No. And again, you know, tell me what you think here, Jake, but I'm starting to think that Tavares stays.
Oh, I've been under the opinion Tavares stays for the entire time.
I just feel like Lou Lamoriello is whispering sweet nothings into his ear right now, and it's working. So he's being sold a bill of goods. I still wouldn't stay there if I were him, but it is what it is.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to get into some squishy territory. Let's put it like that right
squishy.
Now. Christian W1707 says, what would it take for the Ducks to trade for Hoffman at his current diminishing price? And I'm going to add this point to it. With everything going on with Mike Hoffman, would you want your favorite team to trade for him?
Well, here's the thing. First off, it's a very messy situation.
Yep.
Whatever's going on there in Ottawa, and we don't have to spend too much time. People can look it up what's going on.
Exactly.
I don't want to really talk about it, but it's still,
it's
still an allegation. Nothing has actually been proven. Yep. People have come out in support of the Carlson side. The Hoffmans have completely denied it. And there's just no way of really knowing what's true and what's not right now. But all things considered, if you can kind of make that work within your locker room or make sure, you know, that this situation doesn't happen again. He's a really good player, and he's, you know, in the prime of his career, and he's, I think he's still a guy that makes most teams better. Purely from an on-ice perspective, he's still a guy that I would be interested in acquiring, you know, all off-ice stuff aside.
Yeah, I think the hard thing for me is just how do you have your team accept that guy in the locker room? And yes, it's allegations. Yes, nothing's been proven, but I would have a hard time, at least at the current moment with everything that's been reported and everything like that, especially with people that we're not going to get into it too much, but the people have stepped out and kind of supported the Carlsons. It makes it a difficult situation, I think, for me to stomach personally as a fan. So that's kind of where I'll leave that at.
Right. And one thing that I would add is, you know, there is something to be said for you want the guys on your team to enjoy coming to work every day. Mm-hmm. It's like any job. And if you bring in someone who, you know, has baggage, how does that sit in the locker room? How does that, you know, how do guys view that? And it could, I don't know. It's just, there's really no way of knowing, and maybe just avoiding that altogether is the best scenario there. I really wonder what they're going to be able to get for him now.
I don't know what they can get, to be honest. We were talking about this in Slack, but I'm wondering, because there's no way that he can coincide in that locker room anymore with Erik Karlsson.
Oh, no, he's out. He's completely gone, 100% gone. It's a question of, is Karlsson gone as well?
Yeah, and I don't know how you can sell to the fan base if for somehow they kept Hoffman and traded Karlsson. How do you sell that to your fan base? I just don't think there's any way, which is why I think Hoffman is gone. But if no one will take him based upon this baggage, do you have to then buy him out?
Nah, someone will take him. Teams are interested in Slava Voynov, Jake. Anyone, no matter the baggage, can have interest in the NHL.
All right, he's gonna
get traded somewhere.
We're jumping to Reddit. Discuss how much better the Panthers' 25th anniversary logo is than ours.
Oh, geez, so I haven't seen it.
The Panthers' logo is very, very clean. It's a 25 over a round kind of certain like logo, kind of sort of like our SB Nation, the Anaheim Calling logo with the round outside, and it says Florida Panthers Hockey Club on it on the outside with the dates. And on the inside of that, it's basically the Florida or the I don't think it's the Florida flag, but whatever that logo is that they have on their shoulder with the red cross, basically the red X. Oh,
is it the circular logo that I'm looking at here?
Yes.
That's a nice logo. Yeah. The Florida flag in the background. Yeah.
And then that in comparison to the Ducks baby bump logo.
Yay. We have a Web D in our five. Look at our cool logo.
It looks like now, the 25 is pregnant.
Now buy merchandise.
It looks like the 25 is pregnant.
Yeah, I mean, what could they have done more? What could they have done better with that 25th anniversary logo?
Just gone for a clean and simple look. But then again, they tried to do that with the 20th anniversary one, and it didn't come out great. So, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the 20th logo that they had 5 years ago. I'm not a huge fan of the 25th logo.
Yeah, I think this 25th is an upgrade over the 20th.
All right. So, fair? Let's blitz through these last couple questions. The Denmark Peru game is starting in 10 minutes, and I have a
date with Destiny.
I do. My favorite player, Christian Eriksen's on Denmark. My fiance's family is Peruvian, so this game is of huge
trouble in paradise.
Yes. So here we go. Those Pros on Reddit says, what do you think about, and this is about soccer, about the World Cup, what do you think about VAR's impact at the moment? And I'll kind of go add on to that. How do you think hockey can take from it? So I don't know if you have a huge opinion on it.
You know when people tweet words in all caps in between them, they have like the clapping hands emoji. Have you seen those tweets?
Yes.
People know what I'm talking about. Well, what I would say is goal line technology. If there's anything that hockey can take from this World Cup, it's goal line technology. In yesterday's Portugal-Spain match, which was fantastic, by the way, they were able to determine pretty much instantaneously there was a shot from the outside of the box that, you know, hit the crossbar and went straight down. And at first glance, it looked like as though it might have been a goal. And they quickly reviewed it, or they were quickly able to verify that it did not fully cross the goal line. And man, why don't we have that in hockey? That would, I mean, think of all the goals that we just can't rule on because they're under the goalie's butt. So I think if there's anything that hockey can take away from the World Cup, it's goal line technology.
Yep.
And I think that is coming, by the way.
And it affected the early morning game with the France.
And the Aussies. Ooh.
The France-Australia game with Pogba had a shot, went off the post, came down, and was in. The ref originally didn't rule goal, but his watch, because that's how they do it, his watch vibrated, and which meant the ball went fully over the line.
That is so cool.
Yeah, and so VAR, though, is a little bit different. That's video assistant referee, and that is basically any time in this World Cup you see the ref point to his ear, there's a fifth official somewhere offsite that has the ability to look at video, and he's talking to him then and allowing him to have an opinion, and it's for offside, for any penalty in the build-up play to the goal, to look at penalties, that type of stuff. And actually affected the game this morning, where in addition to the VAR, the referee is able to go and look at video after the fact. So I think there's a lot that can be taken from it. I think having an off-ice official that the referee can talk to would be a very good thing for hockey to kind of take from it. So let's kind of, we have a fair amount, so I'm going to try to sift through. Sorry if I'm skipping over any with time now running short. Any notable free agents that you think could come to Anaheim? James Neal, Paul Stastny, JVR, Kovalchuk.
Well, it sounds as though the Ducks are on the, let's see, they're on the, maybe in the second tier, maybe even third tier of teams that are interested in Kovalchuk. Pierre LeBrun reported this. I think Dreger reported this as well, the TSN bigwigs. It sounds as though the Ducks are on that list. I don't really know what to make of that necessarily. I think Kovalchuk is a nice piece to add for the Ducks, just to add another guy who can create his own offense and who can, you know, provide some dynamic scoring from the wing. They just don't really have a whole lot of that. And so, you know, if he's in play, and it sounds like he's not going to sign a long-term contract, it sounds like he's perfectly okay signing a 2 to 3 year deal. I don't see a reason why the Ducks shouldn't go for it.
Yeah. I just am skeptical just because of the whole Russian factor that we talked about with the, not saying that that should be a thing, but the fact that the Ducks, that matters to them. I don't really see them playing a huge part though in free agency, to be honest. I think that you have a lot of roster spots already taken. The only person I could see them maybe going after would be like an Andre Schuster, someone in that mold to be that sixth.
Schuster?
That's a name that's been thrown around our Slack.
Really?
A lot.
Not very good.
Nope, but he is a sixth defenseman. It wouldn't be awful.
That is just a total affront to Corbin and Holzer.
All right, so Teacher's Nightmare gives us a lot of questions, so I'm trying to sift through which ones to go on. Thank you for all the questions, or all of them. Do you see Anaheim entering a full rebuild within the next few years, or staying as more of a year-to-year playoff team?
Yeah, I think year-to-year playoff team is more realistic. I just think that as long as they have Perry and Getzlaff on the books, and Kessler as well, I think this is a team that's going to try to be... I think it's a team that's going to try to be relevant. I think that they're going to try to go, if they do rebuild or enter rebuild, I think it's going to be, I hate to say it, but I think it's going to be a little Vancouver-esque, you know, where they keep kind of the franchise guys around to see it through and to, you know, quote unquote, make the young guys feel like they have a chance to win on any given night. But I don't know if the Ducks will ever truly get to that point because, you know, guys like Lindholm, Manson, Fowler, mm-hmm. even Montour are going to be entering their primes, and these are going to be, you know, it's going to be a reasonably good blue line for a couple years now. And so really when people talk about a rebuild for the Ducks, what they're really commenting on is just kind of a lack of star power in the pipeline up front. And so I don't think that necessarily requires a full teardown.
Yeah. And one thing I'll mention is that I think it's going to be something similar to what we saw at the early or beginning part of this decade, is that it was more of a retool than a rebuild. The Ducks had Getzlaf, Perry. They had the depth at forward. It was on the blue line that they were lacking, having lost Scott Niedermeyer, having lost a lot of their big guys from the cup run. And they did a bit of a retool and took Cam Fowler with the number 12 pick. They took Lindholm with the top 5 pick. They did some good depth drafting on the blue line. They took Shea Theodore. They took Jacob Larson. They really kind of focused on that, did the retool, and were able to build as they were also kind of building the winner. They were able to draft well. And I think that's something that we could see at the forward position. Maybe you have a year or two where they miss the playoffs, can draft high and get that next Getzlaf, get that next Perry. But then it's only a year or two. It's not 5-6 years of missing the playoffs because they have this blue line that's going to be in their prime.
Right. And the other thing that I should mention there is this is why I think it's kind of a fallacy to draft for need, because the Ducks could have stopped drafting defensemen at any given point. I mean, they really do have a nice stockpile of them. But now the great thing is you have this surplus of defensemen, and at some point, you can probably flip that into getting some assets up front. And so they're going to be able to, because, you know, the reason why teams rebuild is because it's the easiest way to get a star player. And the only other way to do that is either you get a guy in free agency, which at that point you're getting a guy who's 27 years old, or you make a trade. And it's much harder to trade for a star player. But if you do have a surplus of young, let's just say, you know, trade valuable defensemen, then you can at least go out and get a couple of guys to, you know, to maybe spruce up your forward group a little bit. And so I think that the Ducks are in an interesting position moving forward, but I don't think we see a true rebuild for quite some time, to be honest.
Yep. And I think the next good question in Teacher's Nightmares question that we can build on is, which prospects do you think are most likely to make the roster out of camp?
Ooh, well, this is a question that we've talked a lot about, it feels like. Mm-hmm. My money, where does my money go? I think that just because Troy Terry had a look this year, I think he's going to kind of be the first man up to, or at least he's going to be given every opportunity since he has had a taste of the NHL, albeit brief. I don't know if he sticks around, but I think he is a guy that will get a look out of camp. Now, the question is, Jake, should we be asking who just gets a sniff out of camp and plays those 9 games or plays, you know, whatever number of games, or do we think someone makes the roster permanently out of camp? Because to me, that's the more interesting question.
I think they go hand in hand, because I think in order to make it long term, you have to be given that shot to be able to.
But how many guys within that pool of prospects do you think can really carve out a permanent spot?
I think 3.
Okay.
I think Steele, Terry, and Larson.
Notable absence there, Max Jones.
Yeah, I think Jones needs a year or two in the AHL.
To be honest, that's just my personal opinion. To be honest, I think all the forwards do.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
But if we're talking blue line, I think Larson is almost a lock to make it out of camp.
Yeah.
Almost a lock.
I think he's the odds-on favorite.
It's really up to him if he wants to make it or not at this point, because the spot is there for him.
I think as of right now, my opinion on this past season with Larson is they wanted to give him a full season in the North American game, especially when you add in the fact that he was injured for part of it. I think they just wanted to keep him down there after recovering from injury and letting him kind of build up on that ice time. They've done that in the past with guys like Brandon Montour, with not giving him a call up right away, with Shea Theodore, letting them kind of at least have that first professional season to really kind of work on it.
Right. Well, one thing I will say is that if you are a San Diego Gulls fan or season ticket holder or whatever, next season should be a lot of fun down in San Diego, because there's going to be some pretty big names down there and should be some pretty skill. Good team. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So last two questions. Let's get through these quick. The game has just started. So Berserker Olaf on Discord said, is there any way to make the Hockey World Cup as much of a must-watch event as the World Cup outside of just growing hockey? My opinion on this, the issue is that it's an NHL and NHLPA event. There's no history behind it. The World Cup goes back to the 1940s, and that's why the Olympics were such a prestigious event to have the NHL go, because this is something that's gone back hundreds and hundreds of years, or not hundreds and hundreds of years, decades upon decades. And there's a lot of history behind it. You have the 1980 Miracle on Ice. You have a whole lot of history, and so it makes it feel more important. Whereas the World Cup feels like this turn, the World Cup of Hockey is just this tournament that the NHL decided to put on a couple years back and kind of bring
right.
back.
Right. So well, it to doesn't. Your point, yeah. To your point, it is all about the history, and it is all about kind of the tradition. And to me, that's what the Olympics are in hockey. I think that the Olympics are pretty, you know, tradition rich, history rich. The issue is that the NHL doesn't really like the International Olympic Committee. And so I don't think we'll ever see really a World Cup type event that is not Olympic related that will share that same fanfare as the Soccer World Cup. But I guess what could they do? I would say just keep doing things like, you know, including a Team North America. I think that really got people interested just to see, oh man, like how can, you know, how can this team of youngsters perform against some very established players? Now, some people said it was gimmicky and I don't necessarily disagree, but I think it made it much more of an interesting tournament. And so things like that, you know, could certainly be interesting. I may be against though the Team Europe thing just because I thought those jerseys were kind of lame. But yeah. Also, I want guys like Anze Kopitar to be able to represent their countries and not just be lumped in. I mean, I just think it's a little odd, to be honest. But yeah, just keep getting creative, and I think you can get a good product out of it.
Okay, and this is going to be the final question, and it's dependent on things happening. But who do you reasonably think? Or no, sorry, I read this question wrong at first. It's not dependent on a bunch of things. Who do you reasonably think will be off the team from last year? And so this will be our final question.
Off the team from last year that is not coming back. Well, I guess the easy answer is Jason Chimera and Chris Kelly. That's my safe answer.
Kevin Bieksa also, in my opinion.
Kevin Bieksa is gone. I think most of the core stays intact, though. I don't really see too many big names. I think Silverberg is a possibility. I still don't think it's a lock that he gets traded this summer. So I don't know. This Ducks offseason, I almost don't really have a good handle on it right now. I feel like it's either they go crazy or nothing happens at all. I don't think there's much of a middle ground. We'll see.
Yep. All right.
So I think
that will do it. The last thing we should pimp out, although actually I think all the spots are taken, is we're doing Anaheim Calling versus Totally Offsides pickup game.
Yes, so if any of you listen to us, we drove up to LA to join Chip on her new show, Totally Offsides, a great podcast, suggest you check that out. And yes, we are doing a pickup event, so it's Team Anaheim Calling / Miller Lite against Team Totally Offsides. And
wait,
it should be a lot of fun.
No, not Miller Lite. Not Miller Lite. the other Miller thing Lite. Is, for those of you wondering where I was for that podcast, I had some wedding planning events, but I will be on in a couple weeks, actually. I will be on Totally Offsides, and we are going to get Chip on at some point over the summer also.
Yes. Okay, and do we have any details as to the logistics of this pickup event?
It will be on Saturday, July 7th, I believe is the date. Let me double check Saturday, July 7th, and it will be at 7 p.m. So if anyone wants to come and just hang out and watch, feel free to check out Totally Offsides' Twitter account for how to get on the wait list. Like I said, all the spots are currently taken, but if you want to get on the wait list, you can shoot her an email at the Totally Offsides Gmail account. But go to her Twitter, the Totally Offsides Twitter, to find that out.
Absolutely. Okay, well, anything else, any other housekeeping items you want to get to, Jake, before we wrap this up? Okay. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening. Did we have a live thing going, live Mixler?
We have had a live Mixler. Okay. We had about 7 people in there. So thank you to Christian, George, Smack, Crackle, and Pop. So yeah.
Thank you to the early birds who tuned in, and thank you to everyone who will be tuning in. Make sure to check out the podcast and the Apple Podcast app. As always, please leave a rating and a review if you've been enjoying the show, or if you're a new listener, a longtime listener, or maybe hasn't submitted a review yet. We'd love to hear from you. Also, we will read them even on the show. And also do check us out on soundcloud.com/acpod. Search Anaheim Calling the podcast in the SoundCloud mobile app. And of course, check us out at anaheimcalling.com. That is our home base. Check us out there. We're going to have a lot of draft coverage. So make sure to tune in at Anaheim Calling on Twitter if you just want to have it straight into your Twitter feed. Jake is on Twitter at ReindeerGames91. Make sure to check his Twitter out for all the Ducks updates and Cinnamon Toast Crunch love.
Apologies for all the soccer talk that will be going on this summer.
Well, it's the World Cup. You know what? It's the World Cup. Deal with it.
It's the World Cup plus transfer time for European soccer.
When people get mad at me about tweeting about other sports, I just say deal with it. I'm on Twitter at Felix_Sicard. Check me out there. Went on an angry tirade last night about the Canadiens trading Alex Galchenyuk. So if you just want to witness my misery, I definitely suggest following along there. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you at the next pod. We will have something to break down the Ducks draft day. So that'll be it for today, and we will talk to you soon.
Bye.